This is a segment from The Annex, an academic sociology-themed podcast. For more, visit us on the web at theannexpodcast.com. Now we're going to turn our focus to Corey Fields. Corey is an associate professor of sociology at Georgetown University. He's the author of Black Elephants in the Room, The Unexpected Politics of African-American Republicans. And it's published by the University of California Press. Corey, we're very happy to have you join us.
Yeah, glad to be here. I've enjoyed the conversation so far and enjoyed the previous episode. So hopefully I won't gum it up, you know.
When you're at the bottom, there's nowhere to go but up.
You'll get that dead cat bounce that we're known for.
Corey, can you tell us about Black Elephants in the Room?
Yeah, so no, the book, like most first books, grew out of a dissertation project. I guess I like to think about it as providing some insight into what's it like to be Black and Republican today. There actually have been recently quite a few interesting historical takes on Black Republicans. There's sort of things I've looked at, like the development of Black partisanship in the United States. But what I was interested in was like the lived experience of being Black and Republican, and what that could tell us both about, you know, sort of how identity, specifically race, structures political engagement, but also a bigger story about sort of variation in terms of, you know, what it means to be Black and how Black people understand their Blackness and use it as a motivator, like behaviorally, in terms of what they do. I don't know. That was a very open-ended question. I'm not sure I'm answering it right. I've gotten out of like book hustling mode. lost some of my skill of synopsis.
I thought, what an amazing topic, because I feel like there's so much to learn about race and politics with a topic like this, because you have a community that's sort of double out group, both as Blacks and as Republicans. What did you learn about race or politics through the process of making this book?
So you're right. They're both right. They're minorities among Blacks and even more minorities among Republicans. So depending on, you know, I mean, I guess the sort of generous number would be, in most surveys, about 9 to 10% of Black people would hand raise as Republican. Now, the number who actually vote Republican varies wildly depending on, not that wildly, but it varies a lot depending on the actual election, like state, local, national. Black people only make up about 3% of all Republicans, right? So they're marginal in both directions. So in that sense, they were interesting. But I guess one of the things I learned, or I guess I mean, to some extent learned, was I was struck by the extent to which they're minorities and outliers, but not necessarily that unique. Certainly in terms of thinking about Black political behavior, right? So what I was struck by was the extent to which a lot of the people I talked to and a lot of the people I observed thought of themselves as engaged in Black politics, right? Like sort of being Republican, it was motivated by a commitment to, you know, Black collective uplift. It was just, you know, they thought the best thing for Black people was conservative social policies, right? Republican politics. Now, that wasn't the only way to be Black and Republican. I guess the other interesting aspect was, given that most of the people I talked to talked about their Republicanism in this sort of pro-Black language, right? This pro-Black framing, the distinction between those people and our sort of popular notions around what a Black Republican is and what a Black Republican believes, right? So that was striking, right? The disconnect between the activist I was talking to and this sort of, you know, colorblind public face of Black Republicans. So I guess the, you know, headline was, you know, Black Republicans, you think you know, but you have no idea, right?
I always imagine when I think of that group as sort of the Well, the, you know, the pre-Rohypnol Bill Cosby, like people should...
Right, pull your pants up, sagging, like, yeah, that sort of personal responsibility and message. That's certainly there, but that's actually, you know, that sort of conservative streak you will find across a lot of Black politics, right? Like on both sides of the aisle, this sort of pull up your pants, kid. And in that sense, one of the things that was interesting, I would often say quite a bit of what I heard talking to Black Republicans wasn't that inconsistent from what I would hear at Thanksgiving, right? Oh, and I should say I'm Black, right? So it's, you know, it's not like some white dude being like, yeah, my family talks about Black people should be more responsible at Thanksgiving. But, you know, so, right. So some of this, yeah, sort of conservatism, personal responsibility messages, very much, you know, don't just exist among Republicans, right? I mean, in some ways, for me, what was more interesting were, in some ways, the politics of it and thinking through, you know, what was I seeing that helped me better understand why Republicans are less able to marshal and leverage the conservatism that exists within Black communities, right? So in some ways, that's a more interesting, or not more interesting, but also an interesting question. Why aren't more Black people Republican? Now, I can't, you know, though, given the nature of the research I did, I can't answer that question definitively, but it did feel like from talking to Black Republicans and watching them, seeing what that experience is like did sort of make me think, well, I guess I can understand why more Black people don't do it, you know?
So I have had a chance to read Corey's book, and, you know, there are a couple of things in there that I found actually really fascinating, right? So the first is, I mean, so you have, you know, kind of like this typology of Black Republicans, right? So there's the Black Republican who, you know, is sick and tired of being taken advantage of by the Democratic Party, right? Who embraces, you know, her inner conservative, right? And says, you know what, I can mobilize this to actually do something for my community as a whole, versus the other type of Republican, which I think is the Republican that, the Black Republican that we tend to imagine, you know, one who doesn't seem connected to the Black community at all, one who is very individualistic.
Right. I mean, yeah. So one way to think about it is this sort of, you know, distinction between, I say, a Black power through conservative principles versus race doesn't matter kind of conservatism. But I would caution with the latter group. One of the things I try to do in the book is sort of say that for, you know, colorblind or, you know, race blind Black Republicans, it's not that they sort of are completely disconnected from Black communities and don't care about Black communities, right? I think it's more the case that we have to stop thinking about Blackness as this master status that defines everything these people do, right? So what they're saying often is like, when I think about what church I want to go to, or what neighborhood I want to live in, or what school I want my kids to go to, being Black matters. Sort of matters. But when I think about tax policy, well, I don't really understand why my race should matter in that regard, right? And so what, to me, that sort of drew out was this notion of, you know, it's not like we tend to head nod often to like, oh, right, yeah, no, you know, all Black people aren't the same. Sure. But then we, in practice, certainly as sociologists, often end up just sort of, are you Black? Yes, no, right? And so one of the things, you know, that with the Black Republicans, even the colorblind Black Republicans, it's very much a story around politics, right? And the role that you think race should play in your politics, not so much like in your life in general. Now, certainly the, you know, race conscious Black Republicans would critique that position and be like, you know, what are you talking about? How can you separate race from your politics? That's a naive position. But That's part of what the distinction is. It's right. To what extent do Black people see race as structuring their life chances, right? And and what role should it play in political organizing?
It sounds to me like there are alternative visions. So what I'm gathering from you is that there is the Black Republicans, they don't ignore race. It's that they have a different vision of, a lot of them have a different vision of how to advance the Black community in mind.
Right. There's certainly, and what was interesting to me was the extent to which these competing visions exist among Black Republicans, right? Like, I was struck by the amount of infighting among Black Republicans, right? We tend to think of Black Republicans themselves as a monolithic group, but even within that group, there are these very, very different articulations and different understandings of, right, sort of what race politics should look like, or if politics should be inflected with race. And so part of what's interesting is how that gets mediated through, you know, within the broader conservative movement.
Yeah, one of the things that in thinking about this book today, as we were preparing for the show, one of the things that I wondered is, you know, especially in thinking about those Black Republicans who decided they no longer wanted to be taken for granted by the Democratic Party, you know, sort of what kind of, I don't know, what kind of lessons should the Democrats actually take from these Black Republicans, you know, especially in light of, you know, people have been saying and sort of during this autopsy of the last presidential election that Democrats, you know, the whole identity politics thing is what did you in, which I find really interesting because it seems that when you focus on the white working class and beat that to death, that's not considered identity politics, but, you know, that's neither here nor there. So I'm wondering what your thoughts are on that, Corey.
Yeah, I think, you know, in some ways, part of what's interesting about this is Black voters in general in the U.S. are really constrained partly by the nature of politics, right? Like, your choices are heavily constrained. So there's sort of two options. I mean, Paul Frymer writes about this as Blacks being a captured vote, right? So because the Republican Party doesn't really do much to reach out to them, that frees up the Democrats to not have to care so much, because where else are you going to go? Right. I think the real danger for Democrats is non-engagement. So Black voters just don't turn out. Right. They sort of see this like captured option and just like, well, screw it. I'm not going to do anything. And because the Democrats have been saddled as the Black Party, they, you know, kind of get, I guess, for lack of a better term, like the negatives without any of the sort of corresponding votes positives. In terms of like what, you know, what to do, what Democrats can do with this, that's a good question, actually. I hadn't really thought much about it. And most of the questions have been focused on, like, when people ask this, like, what can the Republican Party do based on your insights? I mean, I guess most broadly, I would say maybe it's not so much like pragmatic or practical do X, Y, and Z thing, but a broader, the message of the story. Because I think, you know, one of the broader messages around the politics of it is, you know, within the Republican Party, engagement in the Republican Party really has this way of constraining how Black people can talk about being Black, right? And to the extent that I think the same thing happens on the left as well, there maybe is a lesson there for, you know, trying to find ways to free up space for, you know, different ways of, you know, talking about, thinking about, and expressing, you know, Blackness within the Democratic Party. Although, I mean, certainly there's more room for that. And you're seeing this, right? Like the Bernie Sanders campaign with the whole thing, the Black people who supported Bernie Sanders being like, don't silence us, you know, like all Black people weren't for Hillary. And so, yeah, I think that's maybe one way to think about this.
Gabriel.
Yeah, so a bit ago, Corey was talking about there's this divide between Black Republicans who primarily identify themselves as, you know, just colorblind conservatives, and those who primarily identify themselves in terms of this is the best route to solving or helping the problems of Black people. And I was thinking the way you usually think about the conservative movement, and to a lesser extent the Republican Party, is that there's a divide between kind of the insider, somewhat elite, technocratic camp and the more populist camp. And I see that also occurring among Black Republicans, but as I was like writing down a list of names, I could see it kind of cross-cutting too, right? So it's like, if you think of like the kind of like intellectual, insidery type people, you have, you know, people like Jason Riley, Tom Sowell, Clarence Thomas, depending on what side of the bed he got up in the morning, Glenn Lowry. And you know, some of those guys would be essentially kind of race blind, and some of them would be very oriented towards the, you know, specifically Black issues, right? So Thomas, historically, not necessarily right now, but historically, and Glenn Lowry would identify themselves as focused on the issues of Black America, whereas I think Riley and Sowell, not so much. And then kind of on the populist, you know, demagogy type side, you know, you got people like Sheriff Clark, Herman Cain, Ben Carson. And again, I see kind of cross-cutting there, where Clark would identify himself as, you know, more the colorblind type. And actually, I think part of his appeal is that he kind of creates, he'll echo back some pretty nasty things that white people like to think. And,
right,
you know, it's appealing because he's Black. You know, whereas Ben Carson, you know, he comes out of this cross-cutting Black and evangelical tradition. Anyway, I'm just thinking that you can almost have like a two-by-two of like, you know, populist versus intellectual, which is kind of the main cleave within the Republican Party. And we know who won the last primary on that. And then also this issue that you're talking about, you know, what's primary and what's secondary.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think, yeah, that's an interesting perspective on it. I mean, because in some ways, you know, to end up as a prominent Black Republican, right, like requires buy-in from white Republican gatekeepers, right? Like, so yes, when we hear about a Black Republican, we hear about them through, they come through channels of the Republican Party, right?
It's were you the one who told me the joke, what do you call the only Black guy at a conservative conference? And the answer is Mr. Keynote Speaker.
I don't recall telling that joke to you, but maybe. I mean, I remember we've talked about this, that this happens, right? That, like, so one of the things that would happen with fieldwork, I'd go, you know, show up at events and it'd be like, you know, Black Republican in blue state caucus. And I'd be like, okay, you know, this is going to be a thing. And it's like, there would be, you know, two Black people there, me and the speaker, right? And that kind of thing happened all the time, right? So in some ways to, you know, get a platform, right? Because that's partly because, you know, Black Republicans are frozen out of a lot of Black politics, right? Like, there's no seat at the table, right? And so if you want resources, those resources have to come from white Republicans, right? But that means you have to sort of go through the gauntlet of white Republicans. And part of making it through that gauntlet means like walking this fine line on this sort of race blind, race conscious dimension, Gabriel. And so, you know, someone like Ben Carson, you know, in terms of like channeling his way up to where he is, has to sort of initially take this, like, or not, at some point has to sort of embrace and sort of give full throated support to a sort of race doesn't matter perspective, right? Otherwise, you know, when, you know, it's only been very recently that when Fox News would even be interested in someone saying Black power through conservative principles, right? Over like race doesn't matter when it comes to Black Republicans.
Well, maybe so, for Fox that's new, but I mean, that was Nixon experimented with that appeal. And so did William F. Buckley. So I recently read one of Heather Hendershot's books. I forgot what it was called, but it was her book on firing line. And she was talking about how in the 70s, this was kind of a thing of conservative intellectuals, that they were kind of flirting with the idea of black power and how they could form an alliance with it.
Definitely. And so, right. And so in some ways, the relationship between the Republican, as the relationship between race, blackness within the Republican Party has evolved, so has there been like a shift in what black Republicans look like, right? Like one of the things I sort of talk about is how, you know, in some ways, black Republicans themselves become bellwethers for what the Republican Party looks like. You can tell a lot about the party by its black Republicans, right? And so, you know, if you think about Edward Brooke from Massachusetts in the 60s and 70s, right? This was, you know, a black Republican senator who, you know, was a, you know, ardent supporter of civil rights, you know, outspoken on that, deeply embraced by the black community, right? And then you sort of, you know, the evolution of what the Republican Party has been about has led to shifts in what its black Republicans look like. So now, you're right, you know, what is it? Diamond and Silk are the face of black Republicanism in this sort of Trumpian era. But that's partly a function of, you know, shifts within the party, right? In terms of who gets a platform. So
speaking of these kind of issues of like changes over time, I realize this wasn't the kind of methods that you'd be conducive to, but you obviously did all the background work. To what extent do you see like cohort effects, right? To what extent would black Republicans be identified with people from cohorts that came of age before the civil rights movement, you know, as compared to kind of when you had, you know, the Southern strategy and that sort of thing, and to a certain extent, the party constituencies flipped.
Yeah, so I think you end up with, so the vast majority of people that I talk to, right, it's actually, it's post-civil rights, so younger cohorts are actually more likely to be Republican. Mm-hmm. I mean, all this is in flux, obviously. Who knows? I mean, I don't want to sort of speak with permanence, but there was and part of that was like being further away, both from the collective orientation of black politics around the civil rights movement, right? And so there's this sort of variation in like what you can want as a black person. We don't all want the same thing, combined with being further removed from explicit like anti-black messaging of the Republican Party. Mm-hmm. And so that sort of happened with younger cohorts. In some ways, it's a weird thing. Like this book, I feel like, you know, the research was collected and actually the book was written for the most part before this most recent election. And so a lot of the things, it's like, well, this sort of, you know, movement away from explicitly racial appeals by the Republican Party makes me sound like a fool today. But just think, like, a year ago, if we were doing this, he'd be like, yeah, that seems
reasonable. Did you look into how much it would have cost you to buy out the print run and have it pulled? So you could,
Corey, where are you headed now in terms of your research?
So the next big project, I have a couple, like, what I'm calling my palate cleanser things, but the next big project actually grows out of some of the Black Republican stuff. So one of the things that I was struck by was the ways in which being black in the context of the Republican Party kind of afforded you extra stuff, right? And so in some ways, like, your blackness operated almost as this, like, I don't know, human capital benefit, right? And that got me thinking about ways in which, you know, how we can think about sort of social identities like race providing a competitive edge. So I'm now thinking about what happens when who you are and what you do overlap, and like who you are provides an edge in terms of what you do. So I'm going to be studying what I'm now calling temporarily, I think, identity professionals, people whose jobs are linked to who they are. And more specifically, looking at black people working in advertising. So it's going to be a study that looks at black people working in advertising who do this in black ad agencies compared to black people who work in advertising, but who work in, you know, what the industry calls mainstream agencies. And so it's just trying to better understand, like the, at an individual level, what happens to your sense of identity when your job is partly being black, right? Like, does it make you more committed? Does it make you cynical about identity? And then at an organizational level, looking at how does blackness get incorporated into organizational mission? But then at like a sort of macro level or cultural level, like part of the job of being, you know, a black person in advertising, McDonald's comes to you and says, I need to understand black consumers and blackness, right? As if it's this thing out in the world that can be understood. But the very people tasked with understanding it are also creating the thing itself, right? Because it's like, well, part of, you know, our ideas about what blackness means come from these, like, you know, mass media images kind of thing that advertisers are producing. So that's the next project, Black People in Advertising.
I totally recommend watching Putney Swope, all I gotta say.
Yeah, I was thinking that that sounds like a great field site for that sort of thing, because I don't read Ad Age cover to cover, but I at least skim the headlines most days, and I feel like at least three or four times a week, there's an article along those themes in Ad Age.
Yeah, no, it's definitely in some ways been a bit of an obsession within the industry. And yeah, something I've been interested in for a while. So yeah, that's what I'm going to work on. I mean, like I said, I'd been interested in it before the Black Republican Project, but then coming out of that, it definitely sort of thinking about, you know, sort of how blackness operates at these multiple levels, you know, like the individual Black Republicans, but also within the Republican Party as an organization, but then all that sort of contingent on these cultural ideas about who Black people are and what they need politically. And I just thought, oh, maybe sort of extracting some of those questions and looking at it not just through sort of politics but through work might be interesting. Very nice.
So Corey, I have another question for you about methods. In the process of doing the project, what did you learn about sort of the tricks of the trade of doing research? Some advice that you might pass on to somebody who wants to emulate your methods?
Interesting. So I guess for qualitative people who might be listening, one of the things about this project was, no surprise, finding Black Republicans was actually incredibly difficult. So I spent a lot of time looking for people, and actually spent a lot of time, you know, not being able to interview people or observe things. And what I actually ended up doing was, you know, some analysis of secondary data, so National Black Election Survey stuff, some NES stuff, pooling some NES data. And in the process of doing that, it actually helped me refine what I wanted to do qualitatively. So I had actually a much better sense of what I was looking for, what I wanted to talk to people about. So in some ways, it was a fortunate difficulty in that, you know, I had a hard time launching into the field, and so I was forced to do something else so that I would feel productive. And so that worked out really well. I guess the other interesting thing methodologically that happened in the field was, you know, I often found myself in situations where, you know, I had to decide what to do in terms of, like, people would often say racist things, and Black people would say really negative things about other Black people to white audiences. And this happened a lot, where there would be a lot of the audience would look to me for affirmation, right? It's sort of like informal head nodding thing that, you know, if you're observing, you see, it's like, oh yeah, right. And they would look to me to be like, right, yeah. And I would be struck with this, like, what do I do now? Because it's in the middle of the event, and I'm going to want to talk to all these people at my table afterwards. And if I don't nod along, this is going to be a problem. So You know, that was sort of methodologically, I mean, I guess it wasn't a methodological issue, but this sort of experience of doing research where you're like, what am I willing to do to get the data? And I mean, I'm a whore. I found myself willing to do quite a bit to get the data, but.
For more, visit us on the web, theannexpodcast.com.